Pull up a chair. I want you to stand with me for a second in a big quiet building out at Dulles in Virginia. The Udvar Hazy Center. It's early, before the crowds, and the light is coming down cold and gray through those high windows onto acres of aluminum. And there, up on jacks, wings off, skin peeled back in places like a patient on a table, is an old twin-engine bomber with peeling green paint and a nose full of grime. Most folks walking by would think she was junk. Something they hadn't gotten around to fixing yet. They'd be wrong. That airplane is one of the most decorated combat aircraft in American history. And the men and women working on her have made a deliberate, almost stubborn decision. They are not going to make her pretty. This is Radio Hangar. I'm Tail Dragger, and this is The Hangar. Today we're going to talk about a Martin B-26 Marauder named Flakbait, and a restoration that breaks just about every rule you think you know about bringing an old warbird back. Before we get into her, let me tell you who's keeping the lights on today. Today's show is brought to you by AviationSoul.com, aviation challenge coins for every milestone in flight. First solo, private pilot, instrument rating, all the way up. If you've earned it, they've got a coin for it. Every coin tells a story. Now, I got to thinking, sitting with Flakbait's story this week about how airplanes carry their history and the metal coins do the same thing in your pocket. Check them out at AviationSoul.com. All right, let's go back to the beginning. Now, the B-26 Marauder does not get talked about the way the B-17 Flying Fortress does or the B-24 Liberator. And there's a reason for that, and it isn't a kind one. When the Marauder first came off the Martin line down in Baltimore in 1941, she was fast, she was beautiful. Long cigar-shaped fuselage, twin Pratt and Whitney radials up front, a wing that looked about two sizes too small for the airplane hanging off of it, and that little wing was the whole problem. The engineers had chased speed. They gave her a high wing loading, which is a fancy way of saying a lot of airplane riding on not a lot of wing. And that meant she came down final approach hot. Really hot. Well over 130 miles an hour when the trainers of the day were floating in at half that. Green pilots, kids with a couple hundred hours, would drag her in too slow, lose an engine on takeoff, and she would roll over and bite. Down at MacDill Field in Florida where they train Marauder crews, they lost so many that the men coined a grim little rhyme. One a day in Tampa Bay, they called her the Widowmaker, the flying prostitute, because she had no visible means of support. The Baltimore Whore Congress damn near canceled the whole program. Now here's where it gets interesting. They didn't cancel it. Instead, they did two things. They stretched the wing a little on later models to tame her some, and more important, they brought in a man named Jimmy Doolittle before Tokyo made him famous to prove she could be flown. And he did. He took a Marauder up and flew it around on one engine in front of a crowd of terrified students, feathered prop and all, to show them the airplane wasn't trying to kill them, their technique was. And once the air crews learned her, once they respected that approach speed and flew the numbers, the Marauder turned into something remarkable. By the end of the war, the B-26 had the lowest combat loss rate of any American bomber in the European theater. The lowest, the Widowmaker. Once you learned to dance with her, brought her people home. Which brings us, at last, to Flakbait. She rolled out of the Martin plant in Baltimore in April of 1943. A B-26B model, serial number I won't bore you with. She went to the 322nd Bomb Group, and a pilot named Jim Farrell got her, and Farrell had a dog back home, a little mutt his family called Flakbait, a play on the word fleabait, and so that's what he painted on her nose. Turned out to be the most fitting name any airplane ever wore. Because over the next 2 years, flying out of England and then France, Flakbait went to war more times than any other American aircraft in the entire Second World War. 207 combat missions. Let me say that again so it lands. 207 times that airplane and her crews took off, crossed the channel, and flew into flak so thick the men said you could get out and walk on it. And every single time she came back. Now think about what that means in the metal. She came home with more than 1,000 holes punched in her by anti-aircraft fire. Her hydraulics got shot out. Her electrical system got shot out. Her props got chewed up. She lost engines. She came back one time with her entire tail nearly hanging off. The ground crews would patch her overnight, slap a piece of aluminum over the wound, and send her up the next morning. Twice, her prop was shot up so bad they had to change it right there on the hardstand. She flew through the D-Day invasion. She flew during the Battle of the Bulge. Her crews changed out, tour after tour, but the airplane kept going. She dropped the first bomb of the entire group on one mission and the last bomb of the war for that group on another. Imagine climbing into her. The smell of a Marauder cockpit. Hot oil and hydraulic fluid and rubber and cordite and man sweat. The bark of those two big radials shaking the whole airframe as you run them up. The cold at altitude that got into your bones through the aluminum. And every mission that long run into the target where you couldn't jink, couldn't turn, had to fly straight and level through the barrage, so the bombardier could do his work, straight and level, into the guns. 207 times, when the war ended, somebody, and thank God for whoever it was, somebody had the sense to know what she was. Instead of chopping her up for scrap like they did to thousands of her sisters, they cut Flak Bait apart carefully, crated her up, and shipped her home to the Smithsonian. The nose section went on display for decades. The rest sat in storage in pieces, waiting. And here's the thing about waiting in a warehouse. She was frozen in time. Nobody sanded her down. Nobody repainted her. Every patch those ground crews riveted on under blackout conditions in 1944 was still right there in the metal. So now we get to the restoration. And this is the part I really want you to sit with. Back when Avigus was cheap and airspace was free, the way you honored an old warbird was you made her shine. You stripped her to bare metal. You filled every ding. You repainted her in fresh markings. You polished her up until she looked like she just rolled off the line. And there's a real joy in that. I've stood next to freshly restored Mustangs that'll about bring a tear to your eye, but the team at the National Air and Space Museum looked at Flak Bait and asked a different question. They asked, what is this airplane actually worth to us? Is it worth more shiny and new, or is it worth more exactly as she came home? And they decided. They were going to preserve her, not restore her in the old sense. Conserve every original panel. Keep the battle damage. Keep the patches. Keep the grime, and the scratched-in names, and the wear on the throttle knobs where a scared kid's hand gripped them over the target. They wanted the airplane to still be able to tell you, in her own skin, exactly what she'd been through. That is a far, far harder job than making her look new. Because think about it. When you're just making it pretty, you can throw away a corroded panel and bend up a fresh one. Easy. But when the whole point is that this exact aluminum flew 207 missions, you can't throw anything away. You have to save it. You have to stabilize corrosion without erasing the original surface. You have to clean 70 plus years of grime off without taking the original paint with it. And half the time the grime is history too. The conservators used cotton swabs, little wooden picks, solvents mixed weak on purpose. They documented every rivet, every repair, photographed and mapped the whole airframe before they touched a thing. When they found the wartime patches, they didn't smooth them over, they highlighted them. They wanted you to see the wound and the field repair right next to each other. They found original markings under later coats, mission markers, the little painted symbols the crew added, and they preserved the layers like an archaeologist reading a dig. And here's a detail I love. They chose to leave the last coat of wartime dirt on much of her, because a museum shiny airplane tells you what she looked like the day she was built. A conserved airplane tells you what she looked like the day the shooting stopped. And those are two completely different stories, and only one of them has men in it. This is a whole philosophy in the warbird and museum world now, and Flak Bait is right at the center of the argument. Restoration versus preservation. Do you fly them, or do you freeze them? Do you make them new, or do you keep them true? I'll be honest with you, I love a flying warbird. I love the sound of a Merlin or a big radial clawing at the sky. I think there is nothing on this earth that teaches a young person what these machines were like better than seeing one alive and loud and overhead. That kind of restoration matters, and the folks who keep them flying are doing the Lord's work, but Flak Bait taught me there's room for the other kind too. There's only one of her. There's no such thing as an original Marauder that saw combat still flying anywhere in the world today, not one. So this airplane, this specific pile of patched up aluminum, is a document. She's the last honest witness to what a Marauder crew actually endured. And you don't repaint a witness, you listen to her. The nose still wears that name, Flak Bait, named for a little dog, painted by a pilot who had no idea his airplane would outlive the war, outlive most of her crews, and end up as the standard by which we measure how to treat the machines that carried our people through the worst hours of the last century. Next time you're near Dulles, go find her. And don't be disappointed she isn't shiny. Get up close, look at the patches. Look at the holes they chose not to hide. Every one of those is a morning some kid climbed in, flew straight and level into the guns and made it back to fly again. That's not damage. That's the whole story. Written in aluminum, the details on Flak Bait's service and this conservation work come from the good people at the Smithsonian's National Air and Space Museum, whose conservators have been living with this airplane for years, and from the histories of the 322nd Bomb Group. If you want to see photos of the work, and you should, you can start at radiohangar.com and I'll point you their way. Go stand in front of an old airplane this week. Really look at her, she's got more to say than you'd think. I'm Taildragger. Keep the greasy side down.